accession number 33206, reel 7.
Commander, greet reel 7. You were just telling me off the tape that you weren't interrogated or anything when you were running the Casablanca.
No.
What was your accommodation like there?
Rough. It was an old, unused Arab Legion barracks, as I understood. It had huts with bare concrete floors. No bedding, mattresses or anything else was supplied, so we slept just on the concrete floors. It had a sort of quadrangle outside of rough sand and small stones. It had a wire fence all round and a double gate. There was nothing else to it. That was it. And we were guarded by French gendarmes.
And what was the hut that you stayed in like?
What was
the hut that you stayed in?
The hut that I stayed in was just a bare hut with the concrete floor. It had no windows that I can recall, but I can't recall that sort of detail. I don't think it had windows. It was just bare. There was nothing. No furniture, no nothing.
And what did you do to pass the time while you were in that camp?
Talked. Walked. Speculated, tried to make cigarettes out of coffee beans, unsuccessfully, did that sort of thing to pass the time, and merely just talked. There was nothing else to do. We had no games, no nothing. We had no books, that was the other problem, and they didn't supply any. In any event, they probably didn't have any in English.
Did you, you or your fellow inmates ever think about escaping?
No. There was nowhere to escape to.
And were you able to, did your family know what happened to you? Did they let the authorities know that you were there?
Yes. Yes, my family did know. Well, it was only my mother at that time. Switch off. At that time, yeah. He died later when I was doing the commando course. I think they did. I just honestly can't remember. I think they did know. Yeah, they were informed. But, well, you can switch on if you like. I'm not certain that my mother and father were informed, because one must remember at this time that the number and identity of survivors was not known. And it's just possible, but I can't remember, that they told my mother that, you know, I had been torpedoed or something, but they weren't aware of whether or not I'd survived. So I honestly don't think she knew much about what was actually going on.
Then and other times during the war, were you able to write home to your parents?
From time to time. I mean, it depended entirely on where we were to collect mail, where mail could be delivered. And so there were long periods where we didn't have any mail because it was not known what our movements were, and they wouldn't know where to deliver the mail. We could send mail, but the same thing applied. We had to be somewhere where it could be dispatched, and that wasn't everywhere, unfortunately. So there were long periods between mail being sent and received.
Okay. Should we go back to 1945 then? And when your beach section was disbanded following the end of the Second World War, what happened to you next?
I was then sent to the Mediterranean, to the staff of the Commander-in-Chief Mediterranean, where my job was to be in charge of the signal distributing office and select signals which needed to be seen by higher authority early or even immediately. And that was my job, to make sure that it was quite a big office. It was Commander-in-Chief staff, to make sure it worked and that signals had the right treatment insofar as distribution was concerned.
And whereabouts were you based?
I was based in Malta. At that time, on the side, I played football for the Navy and I played hockey for the Navy and I played water polo for the Navy. And that kept my spare time working because my life wasn't hard. I was watchkeeping and I was doing day on, night on, but with a fair amount of time in between, I think, where I was able to do all these things. And I spent a lot of time on my own because I was free during the day and I would swim in Grand Harbour and practice my water polo, and life was not too hard. I mean, you know, it was quite nice, quite pleasant after the war to have this sort of job. And I did that, I think, for 18 months. And, yes, that's about it.
What was the living accommodation? What were the living conditions like?
Living conditions were okay. We lived in Valletta, but I can't quite remember. It was a naval base. And the accommodation was quite good. I mean, it was a normal naval base in peacetime. And food was pretty good. I remember we ate pretty well. And I had a cabin which was comfortable with a nice bed, and it was good. It was okay. Mm. Certainly better than Casablanca.
Mm. And what happened to you after you left that place in Malta?
I went back to England. Remember, I wasn't commissioned at this time. I was the head of my branch, but I wasn't commissioned. And I went back to England to do commissioning courses and be commissioned, which I did. And that's why I went back. I went back to the signal school. And I stayed there, I think, for a little while, doing the commissioning courses and being commissioned. Yes, I was in Malta until November 46, when I went back to HMS Mercury courses for commissioned rank, and I was commissioned in 47.
What did those commissioning courses consist of? What did you have to learn?
They consisted of all sorts of professional knowledge, you know, courses on professional knowledge. I can't quite remember what they were. They took in all sorts of things, I remember, like navigation, gunnery, and all the things which hadn't actually been my specialisation. So I had to learn those, really. And I then went to um, I then went to the college at Greenwich, I think, to do further commissioning courses. And then after that, I went, in January 50, I went to HMS Glory, which was an aircraft carrier, again in the communications role.
And now you're an officer, had your accommodation, on board accommodation changed? What was it like on
that? Oh, I had a cabin, but it was right underneath the flight deck. And at that time, aeroplanes had propellers, and they were noisy. So my cabin wasn't very good. And although I complained about it several times, nothing changed. But I wasn't very happy in the Glory. It wasn't a happy ship. No, I better not say too much about the ship. But the first land-on of aircraft that I saw was a Fatal. And I saw several after that in Glory. And it created, in my mind, a rather depressing sort of pastime, you know, watching the aircraft come on, not knowing they were going to be okay. See, today with the jets, it's much easier. I mean, if they miss, you know, there are wires on the, and the airplane catches them on the hook. With a jet, I mean, he can take off immediately, but they couldn't do that in propeller-driven planes. And they had to, and they hoisted the barrier, and they ran into the barrier, the aeroplane. And I saw a lot of barrier incidents, and it was all a bit depressing. I'd never been an aircraft carrier before, and I didn't like it very much. But I then went on to, I left the Glory in June 50, and I went back to the signal school, and then subsequently went to another aircraft carrier, HMS Vengeance, which was in the Home Fleet. And the reason I asked for the Home Fleet was because there were lots of stories about how good it was to go visiting Scandinavian ports, and it was done by Home Fleet ships. So I asked for the Home Fleet, which I'd never been in. And got the Vengeance. Unfortunately, it was the year of the the switch off a minute. Oh, no. It was the UK Festival, and Southend had asked for a HM ship to visit, and the Vengeance went. So instead of going to Scandinavia, the reason I'd asked for the Home Fleet, I went to Southend.
So what were you doing there? Were you? What was your role in Southend? Were you greeting members of the public, or?
Yes. Ship was open to public. We gave all sorts of lectures and demonstrations on board. For the benefit, it was, from that point of view, it was very successful. I mean, we had a hell of a lot of people on board. But it wasn't quite what I was expecting. And I tried the South End Pier, which is a mile and a quarter long. And I looked at South End, but, I mean, it wasn't what I wanted. However, I made the most of it, as I usually did. I went ashore with the Admiral the first night. He said, shall we go ashore and look at Southend? So we did just that, and we went around the fun fair. it was Southend. Mm-hmm. There we go, the Blackpool.
And were the were your living accommodation and conditions better than they had been on Glory?
It was the same. It was all. By tradition, that was it, you know. I went in Vengeance. I can't remember a lot about Vengeance. Let me see how long I was on board. Vengeance, January 51 to September 51, so I wasn't there very long. No, I don't remember much about Vengeance, I'm afraid. It was easier than Glory because they didn't have the accidents that Glory had. But always in an aircraft carrier, you had two ship's companies. You had the flyers, who were one part of the organisation, and all their backup and engineers and what have you. And you had the ship's company officers, who were there to drive the ship. And so the airmen thought that we were there for their convenience, to provide a landing landing strip, and we were there because we thought that we should drive them around to use them at their convenience and our convenience. So aircraft carriers weren't my favourite ships. They were divided, unfortunately. And before we ever went into harbour, the airmen flew off. They never stayed on board in harbour. They always flew off to the local naval air station. And they never did any watches, of course, on the bridge. I mean, we did all the watches and everything else, and duty officer, and all that sort of thing. They were just passengers, virtually. And so there was... I mean, I had friends among the airmen, but they weren't... We weren't one United Ships company, which was unusual for me. Then I went to HMS Warrior, which was another aircraft carrier, and did my time on board her. I think the people who sent me to ships, I've forgotten the expression, the appointers in the Admiralty thought that, you know, I knew about aircraft carriers, so perhaps I should go from one aircraft to another. But in total, I wasn't all that time. I went to Glory in January 50, and I finished with Warrior in January 52. So I was there in carriers for about 2 years. And my next appointment was going to be another carrier. So I went to the appointers and protested and said, I am not going. And they said, oh dear, well, I mean, you have to go. I said, no, I don't. And they said, well, you will have to see the appointing admiral. I said, I'll see anybody you like, but I'm not going to another carrier. Right, they said, well, think about this. So they sent for me the following week, and they said, right, you're not going to the... It was the Ark Royal. You're not going to the Ark Royal. You're going to Minesweepers. Well, I didn't know anything about Minesweepers. I've never been to them. So I said, okay. And they said, so that'll settle this argument about where you go. And I said, right. I said, when do I go? And they said, what's the day? Friday, Monday. I said, all right. I didn't have any ties, so it was okay. And that was the way they got back, you know, because I refused to go to where they wanted me to go. So they got back by sending me after the weekend. And I flew to Malta with the rest of the ship's company of a minesweeper, only 35 or 40, I can't remember quite. And I flew to Malta. And the minesweeper wasn't there. It was the time of Suez, and it was off Suez. So having gone from Friday to Monday, being sent, I sat in Malta until they came back with the rest of the ship's company, so it was okay. I got to know them, etc. And then I had a long time in minesweepers, and I loved them. Oh, no, my next ship was a frigate in the Persian Gulf. HMS Wild Goose. I was in her for July 53 to October 54, year and a half I was in her. I loved her, she was very good. Then I went back to the Royal Naval College to do more courses in Greenwich, and from there that I went to Minesweepers, because it was then that they wanted to give me another appointment.
Since being commissioned, how had your duties changed?
Oh, they changed completely. I mean, I finished with communications, and I promoted and transferred to another list. You know, they have lists in the Navy of what you do. And I went as the first lieutenant to the leader of the minesweeping squadron, because I was lieutenant commander. We had a commander in command of the squadron. So I was the first lieutenant of the leader, and I was the squadron minesweeping expert, because what I missed out was because I specialised in anti-submarine, which was an 18-month course in Vernon. That's why I was in Vernon here. And part of the anti-submarine course was minesweeping. It had nothing to do with anti-submarine warfare whatsoever, but nobody else wanted it. So the anti-submarine barracks won it. So in my course, I did minesweeping. So when I went to the minesweepers, I was the minesweeping expert. And in fact, I had to be, because most of them didn't know anything about it at all. And they had to train them. And I was there for Shervington, November 56, 58. I was promoted to lieutenant commander. I was lieutenant before that. So I was over 2 years in minesweepers, and I served in three of them because we had a habit with minesweepers of paying them off and bringing out a new one. That's a minesweeper. That's the one I was in. That's the leader. He's the boss. And so, first of all, I was in Shervington, and Shervington paid off. And the senior officer, who became a great friend of mine, he transferred to HMS Essington and wanted to take me with him. So I went. And then Essington paid off. I brought her back to the United Kingdom and paid her off, and took command of HMS Walkerton, took her out. So I had three sweepers, but they were all in the same sort of period. Then I was promoted to lieutenant commander. And
So with these minesweepers, were you basically clearing up?
Minesweepers?
We
never actually cleared any live mines in my time. We could have done, but we spent our time in exercising, and you know, there are various types of sweeps. You have wire sweeps for void mines, you have hammers for acoustic mines, and you know, there's quite a lot to know, and we spent a lot of time exercising. But in that time, we also did Cyprus patrol. Now, Cyprus at the time was there was Archbishop Makarios, who had engendered a team of anti-British called IOCA, and the minesweepers and frigates did the Cyprus patrol, patrolling round Cyprus, stopping any ships with arms. We never actually found any, but you know, that was why we were there, and particularly the fishermen. There were a lot of fishermen. Making sure they hadn't got anything. We used to board from time to time and search them. But we became quite friendly with them. But that's why we were there. And once a week, we had one day in harbour, Famagusta in the south. And once every 4 weeks, we were allowed to go take the ship to somewhere not too far away, a port, for the weekend. And I took mine to Haifa in Israel. And I had dinner with the Admiral the night before, or the week before. And he asked me where I wanted to go, and I said Israel, and he thought I was mad. And I couldn't really think up, I thought up some excellent reasons for going, but I'm not sure whether they were very good. He refused me. He said no. Following morning, his first lieutenant arrived at the ship, and he said, the admiral's changed his mind, you can go to Haifa if you want. And that's where I met my wife. She's French. She was in charge of the French cultural centre. And that's where I met her, at the dinner given by the consul there. So it was lucky that I went to Haifa. But it was a pretty rough old job, the Cyprus patrol. Because you know the shape of Cyprus? It's got a panhandle like that. Yeah. And we in the Maitre was, frigates got all the best jobs, the best areas. And we often got the panhandle, and we were there in winter. And the panhandle in winter is not Billy's cup of tea. Nobody wanted it. And the only reason we got round to the southern ones was when we invited the Admiral to lunch. And the Admiral had his residence in, I've forgotten the name. Anyway, further along the south coast of Cyprus there. And so we were switched to that sector, so that we could be there to give the Admiral lunch. And the Admiral was a strict Roman Catholic. And I was warned that when I went to call on the Admiral, I should know how many Roman Catholics I had and their names. Fortunately, we only had five. And the first question he asked me was how many Roman Catholics we had. And I said five. And he said, and their names. So I gave him their names, and I think that made us favourite to get round for lunch, because he wanted to meet the Roman Catholics always. He was very staunch Roman Catholic. He dead now, a long time ago. Crap Myers, he was a Victoria Cross. He was submariner. He went into an Italian harbour, the name of which I got, I've forgotten, and sank two Italian cruisers in his submarine. And he got the Victoria Cross. I mean, he earned it, but I don't know about the ship's company, what they thought about it. Anyway, he got it. And he was that type. Anyway,
when you
that was Cyprus Patrol. We did it for quite some time, actually.
What was the... When you stopped fishing or other vessels to search, what was the process of doing that? How would you...
Oh, we'd send a boat with a boarding party, and check the ship, I mean, search the ship, because there were fishing trawlers, you know, they weren't all that big, big-ish. But, I mean, they weren't interested in taking arms. They might have been forced to, but they weren't themselves interested. They were only interested in fishing. That was their life. So we never actually found any arms. There might have been some, but we didn't find any. And if there were, it was a very small quantity. But they were very useful, because one of the days we invited the Admiral to lunch, somebody said, don't forget it's Friday and the Admiral's a Roman Catholic and he will expect fish for lunch. We hadn't got any. We weren't going in. So we stopped a trawler and we got some red mullet. And the Admiral brought his wife for lunch. And he loved the red mullet, and he gave his wife hell because they never had red mullet at home. But that was the only way we got it from the fishing trawler. So we were quite friendly with them. They knew our job, we knew theirs. So. There we go.
Okay, I'll stop there for a moment.